This is Greg Tingle reporting for Media Man Australia. We're speaking to the Gabby Tabby, Peter Franklin, direct in New York City from Maroubra Beach. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Oh, you better believe it. Live on the streets of New York. And I was just thinking to myself, let's see. I'm sitting here in New York City, which is probably the most exciting place on the face of the earth. I mean, there's no question about that. And we do have some of our own beaches. But you know, right at this moment, I wouldn't mind sitting at a beach with you guys and having a little snort. Not at all.
Mate, you would... We'd be sipping cappuccinos and we'd be loving it just down the road from Bondi.
Oh, I hate you.
Oh, mate, we're going to spread the positive news, mate. Spread the positive vibe. So, Peter, the reason we've called you, we've been listening to you burning up the airwaves in a positive way here in Australia for a couple of years on some of our most prominent Sydney radio stations. So, tell us, how exactly did you start getting involved and people of the world getting to hear your voice from a new, you know, as a New York taxi driver?
Well, it's really kind of a, you know, if I would put it, it's a charming story, and that's not a word a New York City cab driver usually uses. I've been in the taxi business driving for 30 years. Oh, my achy behind. Oh,
yes.
Well, I love it. It's the most fun, exciting job on the face of the earth. So 15 years ago, some guy gets into the cab, and he says to me, oh, I say, old chap, I'm from the BBC, and I'd like to interview you because you're the typical New York City cab driver. And I'm not typical, I speak English.
Yeah.
Anyway, the guy put me on the BBC World Service, which is not bad for your first gig. You know what I mean?
Mate.
I mean, we're talking about 100 million people.
Yeah.
So we did the talking and all of that. Well, then radio stations started, you know, calling me up. You know, that had heard me. You know, you get a guy from a small town or somebody from Surrey and somebody from Glasgow. You know, they say, listen, we heard you on the World Service. Would you mind if you would, you know, if we'd call you from time to time? So I said, why? And I said, well, because we're interested, the world's interested in New York City. You're right smack in New York City. I mean, we know you were born there. You're married there. You raised your kids there. I mean, you know, who could be more New York than you? And the world is fascinated with New York.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, fine. No problem at all. But, you know, I knew right away I was never going to see any money. Okay?
Okay.
The reason for that is that from a practical point of view, if I talk to a guy on the radio for 5 minutes, 6 minutes, what's he going to do? He's going to send me $3? I mean, so I found that very quickly that people would hear me on the radio, and when they came to New York, who do you think they're going to take a tour with?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, so, I mean, that's why, so it's great fun.
Yep.
I'm not working for anybody. I don't have to worry that some sponsor's going to tell me what to say and what not to say.
Yep.
I can be as irreverent as I want. I can't be fired.
No.
Some guy asked me, we're not going to call you again.
For yourself. No. Yeah. Oh, mate, it's brilliant. What a setup. So talk about free advertising. The world is your oyster. When they come to New York City, just like we are, we're going to be thinking of Peter, are we not?
Well, that's the deal. And the other thing why it's not, I mean, it's, in other words, I work alone. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, I got some gigantic overhead here where I got to clear $30,000 a month or something.
Yeah.
If I get 2-3 tours in addition to driving the cab, that's a wonderful thing. So, you know, that usually works out. I get about 1 or 2 tours a month. Somebody hears me on the radio and they come here, which is very smart because, you know, they get to spend the day with a guy who really knows the city. I mean, I've never had a dissatisfied customer here, and I've had a lot of people from Australia. I've had more Australian women in the back of my cab than any other man.
Wow, what a distinction. You'd be giving probably Gene Simmons from Kiss a bit of competition there or something like that. So, as you mentioned before, sometimes people may be a little bit misguided or misled in their own imagination on what actually it is you do, because you hear yourself on the radio, then you check out the website and you go, what's this guy doing running a media company? But you're driving a cab, but you've got the greatest publicity vehicle in the world via the airwaves.
And, yeah, but you got to also think, you know, towards what end. You know, you got to be very careful in life. I got a motto, you know, don't fall for your own bullshit. Oh, yeah. Can I say that word?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, you don't know that. I mean, no. You know, that's the problem with a lot of people in this world. They don't realize who and what they are. I'm very happy and content. I've been married to the same wonderful woman for 30 years. We got 3 wonderful children, a 22-year-old, a 21-year-old, and a 20-year-old. We're happy people. I'm not looking to be a broadcaster. I'm not looking to be a media mogul.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm not going to do it right. So, hey, listen, my stories come from what I hear in the cab, what I see in the newspapers what people tell me.
Yes.
Every Sunday, I kind of prepare myself. I kind of go through all the stories, you know, and kind of see what I think would be interesting. I put them up on the website, which is Gabby, G-A-B-B-Y.com.
Yes.
So I'm certainly doing it in a very professional way.
Yes.
Plus the fact nobody has ever come, you know, nobody has ever called me up and said, "Hello, this is Mr. Todd. I'm the president of Coca-Cola Australia. How would you like to do a few commercials for me for $200,000? I mean, it's never happened, so I haven't had the opportunity to sell out in 30 years. And in 15 years of being on the radio, I have never made that big score that we all dream about. That's okay. I can stay happy.
Okay, but do I understand, without giving too much away, from time to time over the years, have any radio stations ever, like, sent you, you've opened up an envelope and there's something in the mail, or...
No, they do, no, okay, the great percentage of radio stations don't do that. I would say 95% of them, and the reason they don't do that is, frankly, they don't have a budget for it, they're in small towns, small cities, and also, I don't know that I would want to do that, okay?
Yes.
Now, there are people, and because of their position, and I'll say this very reverently, really, is a fellow like Mr. Laws, okay?
Yes.
That's a different situation. He's a big network guy. He's a very, very nice man. I don't really know the man or something. I mean, I would do anything for this guy because he's always nice. But he realizes that I'm a married guy and we've had three kids and everything.
Yes.
So through the years, he's been very gracious and very nice to the Franklin family. Okay?
Yes.
He's like the exception because, remember, he's a very unique character.
Yes.
And not to puff him up or stroke him. I know he's a very controversial figure. But I got to tell you something. I'm the world's leading authority on broadcasters. I've done probably 40,000 live broadcasts. Okay?
Well,
I'm heard, according to the Wall Street Journal, by 300 million people in 71 countries.
Well,
so I know my broadcasters. And if I'm telling you John Laws is a good broadcaster,
yes.
And I'm not winding him up or stroking him here, I'm telling you something, he's one of the best. And that's the same thing. I could go right down the list and tell you who's the best guy in England and who's the best guy in Scotland. Now, I don't want to do that because I don't want to make everybody feel bad.
Yeah.
He's really terrific. He's one of them.
I understand. And John actually gave us an indirect break of sorts in the media business as well, so we'll get off that. So tell us, what's happening with the Babe in New York City at the moment?
Well, you see, we're in a very interesting period right now because this is the end of the summer. The summer has ended here.
Yep.
And that's a very important thing in New York City because we have two completely different lifestyles. During the summer, people are going out to the beaches and doing all those summer things. Now that we're going to head into our fall, this is a time when the Broadway theater starts bringing out new shows, the concerts, the opera, people go back to the clubs, the restaurants, and all those things that they weren't doing during the summertime, really.
Yep.
So you get this sense in the air. Also, everybody's putting clothing back on.
Huh.
I mean, there's nothing worse than some ugly person wearing short pants and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
When the fall and the winter comes along, on a skirt, a jacket, a tie, a coat, and what have you, so at least we're covering up all that ugly body that we see.
Right.
Also, the city becomes a lot quieter because, you know, everybody has got an air conditioner sticking in the window. And all summer long, sometimes I feel like standing for the Empire State Building and telling everybody, shut up! Shut up for a minute?
Exactly.
So we're right now in the midst of the changing time, and it's really a nice time of year for New York. Also, summer is gone. The kids are all back in school. So from this point on, even the, not that I got anything against families, I love kids, but the fact of the matter is, you know, from this point on, all the kiddies are in school.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, like, you know, as you're listening to the conversations and perhaps engaging in a couple as you would, what's on people's minds at the moment? I mean, obviously you've got your the Hillary book, you've got the you know, the New York business 2 years now, you've got the media rulings, FCC. So what are people out on the street talking about at the moment?
Well, you know, I call it empty yak from the back of the hack. Most fun part about driving a cab on the streets of New York, and I call it my yellow mobile invasion. And I'm eavesdropping on everybody's conversations. And because of the way New York City is set up, you know, in a lot of places in this world, only the poor people go on public transportation. Only the poor people who don't have cars go in cabs, you know, that kind of thing. Not in New York City. In New York City, you get a big cross-section of cabs. So you got the people. So I'll have, you know, 20, 30 people, you know, the cab, not at the same time. So I get to hear their conversation. So some of the big topics of conversation, of course, are Iraq.
Yep.
And in the beginning, everybody was gung-ho and very patriotic, and let's go over and get the bastards and all of that. Well, now that we're seeing how much this is costing, the dangers and everything that's going on, you got a lot of people who aren't so sure about the fact that maybe, you know, our State Department kind of screwed up here a little bit.
Yes.
I would like to point out to your nice listeners, our oldest son is a second lieutenant in the Army in Baghdad. So you better believe the Franklin family is concerned with Baghdad. And as a matter of fact, each week now I'm putting some pictures up of people in Baghdad. I'd like to tell everybody I now have opened up a office in Baghdad with my correspondent. So that's Baghdad. I mean, it's the economy here. It's kind of like a recession. Things are down a little bit. Not so much in New York, but in other parts of the country.
Yep.
And then, of course, we're now starting to get into politics. We've got this big cockamamie thing going on in California where they're trying to get rid of their governor. You know,
yep.
Just the way, I think you call him, what, a premier of each one of these states?
Yeah, that's good. And we've actually been covering the election as well. We've been in touch with our main man in California, Rick Drazen, who's an old training buddy of Arnold, so we've been getting the scoop and Abner Zurb and you name it. We've actually done about 7 interviews with some of the New York, with some of the Californians there, and it makes for exciting media, doesn't it?
And because it's California, they're all a bunch of wackos.
Yeah.
Think about Arnold. Arnold is legit, and I'll tell you why. Because in the United States, you usually run for governor on your way to something else. You want to be a senator, you want to be a president, whatever. See, Arnold can't run for president.
Yeah.
The only way you can run for president is by being a native-born American.
Yes.
So, you know, he doesn't have an ulterior motive, and I think that's kind of, I think, an asset to him.
Yes.
Because you know he's not using this just as a stepping stone to something else. So I think he has a pretty good chance. If the Republicans don't screw up, I think he has a pretty good chance of having a good crack at it.
Absolutely.
People here in New York do too.
Yeah, and something I'm interested in, again, because you've got so many people coming in and out of the cab there, as we know, the media and different political opponents have dug up a bit of dirt, so to speak, on him, but do you think it's reasonable? I mean, the guy is, what is he, 50 years old or something, and then he was a young bloke. Of course he did some wild and crazy things like all of us, but of course it becomes newsworthy to talk about he had a great time in the spa or whatever the heck.
Yeah, but I got to tell you something. In the United States, that goes over like a lead balloon. Because I got to tell you something. When I was a kid, it was a different story. You know, if John Kennedy was fooling around, or before that, Dwight Eisenhower was fooling around. Who knows? Maybe George Washington was fooling around.
Yes.
It's now gotten to a point in American politics where nobody really cares. Once upon a time, if you were accused of fooling around, it meant something. And my best advice to the Democrats would be, if they want to go after Arnold's sex life, it's going to blow up right in their face.
Yeah.
Forget about it. Let me tell you something. I always felt that President Clinton made a disastrous mistake, because I think when the question first came up, if I had been his advisor, I would have said to the press, shut up, it's none of your business, and if you ask him any more questions about his sex life, I'm throwing you out of the White House.
Yeah.
You know, you don't ask somebody, wait a minute, you ask somebody how they sit on the toilet? You ask somebody how they pick their nose?
No.
How in the world are you gonna ask somebody how they do their musky-fufky? Well, let's see, first I take off my pants, and then I take off my right shoe, and I mean, whose business is that?
Yeah.
How do you wipe your behind? I mean, those questions you don't ask.
Exactly, and while we're talking edgy stuff, what's some of the most extreme incidents and whatnot that you've had occur in the back of the cab, or at least wacky conversations or wacky passengers over the years, Peter?
Well, you know, it can go from everything. I mean, it can go from, I'll give you for instance, I mean, you know, there's a street here in Manhattan called 86th Street, and it has a lot of psychologists on it.
Whoa.
I always like to laugh and say the reason you go there, you spend $90 an hour to find out you're 18 months. You've got a lot of these young girls in their 20s who, you know, think it's like really cool to go to a psychologist. So not too long ago, I had a couple of these babes in the cab, and they're talking about, the, you know, whether they should have sex with this guy or shouldn't have sex. And I mean, on and on and on. And I mean, the conversation is getting, you know, dirtier and dirtier by the time. And I find it hard to concentrate on driving the cab. You know, it's funny, when I let them out and everything, they thanked me very much. And I said, you know something, girls? I think I need a cigarette. And for a moment, they didn't know what I was talking about, but then, of course, they laughed. I can go to the other extreme where I'm sorry to admit to you nice people that we do have hookers, prostitutes, ladies of the night, and there's nothing more fun than picking up a prostitute after she's finished, either from one of the fancy hotels or even the streetwalkers, and taking them home, not to my home, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there's Elon Musk. Listen, they don't fool around with cam drivers because they know we don't have any money.
Yeah.
But come out to Brooklyn or Queens or up to the Bronx, which are our other boroughs, and getting to hear the stories about what's happened the night before.
Yes.
I mean, if you can forget about the business with AIDS and the danger that I think some of these diseases are, there's something almost fun listening to it. But at the same time, I've got to tell you, once upon a time, if a businessman from Colorado got in the cab and said to me, you know, where can I go for a good time? I would have told him. Now with AIDS, no way. I don't tell anybody anymore because it's very, very dangerous in New York.
Yeah, it certainly is. And you'd know being on the road there all the time. So what time do you knock off today and what else does the day have in store for you?
Well, what I generally do is I generally, three nights a week, I drive from 3 p.m. to 5 a.m., okay?
Yep.
That's what I do three nights a week. And it's an interesting thing because you start off, you got the regular people in the cab, you know, the families, people coming home from school, people going home from work. Then it goes into the people going out tonight at nighttime, going to the theater. Then a little bit later, it's the people going to the clubs. Once you pass about 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning, then you start getting the weirdos, the really strange people,
yeah.
The night people in the street start getting kind of, you know, quiet and, you know, really, you know, the smoke coming up from the, you know, the sewer holes and that stuff. And that lasts until about 3:30 in the morning. 3:30 in the morning, it kind of calms down at that time. It's usually the time when I grab something to eat. My wife usually packs me a lunch and everything. And then I'll work a little bit more up until 5 o'clock when I quit. And at 5 o'clock, the new day is starting, the new shift comes on, and they start picking up, you know, the work, people going to work and what have you. I got to tell you something. I've been doing this for 30 years. You can't find a more fascinating way to spend an evening by nighttime and doing what I do and driving a cab on the streets of New York. I mean, look, I've been doing it all this time,
yes.
And I still say, man, I can't wait to get to work. I
have a ball. That's it. In between phone calls from media outlets around the world.
Well, that's no big deal because, you see, they all call a secret number that I give to them.
Yes.
And that number gets forwarded, if I'm in the cab, to the cellular. When they call me up, and it's happened even with John Laws, and if I have passengers in the cab, I will say to the person, do you mind if I speak to this person who's a broadcaster in Australia?
Yes.
And if the person says, no, I don't want to talk to anybody, and I don't want you talking to anybody, then I will say to Mr. Law's producer that we just can't do the deal, and they know that.
Yep.
On the other hand, if the person says yes, within a matter of minutes, Mr. Laws will jump on it, and he'll be interviewing the person in the back of the room. And, I mean, that's absolutely, you know, fantastic.
Cool.
And that's happened a number of times. So the broadcasters know that they may get, you know, I may have to say no to them. But they all understand that because I got to make a living. And if I talk on the phone and the person doesn't want me to, they're going to file a complaint and I'm going to get fined. So, man, broadcasters are very good that way. Well, they call back later.
And, mate, it's keeping it real, sort of like reality radio, not reality TV. This is life that we live. It's not scripted.
Oh, it absolutely isn't. I mean, you pick up somebody and all of a sudden they're getting interviewed by some guy in Australia. I mean, that's a very exciting thing for them. So what happens is since the average cab ride doesn't last really more than about 15 or 20 minutes in New York City, what I will say to the broadcaster is I can't talk to you now because this person says they don't want me to, but if you call me back in 15 minutes, I will have let them out of the cab at their destination, and then I will stop and wait before I pick up my next fare. So it all works out well.
Mate, it certainly does. Anyway, Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. We will be in touch again in the future. Expect some emails, and when we finally get to America, you're definitely on our list, and we look forward to catching up with you in person, Peter.
It will be my pleasure. Hey, did anybody ever tell you talk funny?
Mate, I am funny. I don't always talk.
He talks very funny. He talks funnier than your average Aussie, let me tell you.
Okay. Did you?
There's a whole army of us. Anyway, Peter, say hi to all your fellow New Yorkers, and we'll be there. We expect in about less than 12 months. We look forward to catching up with you.
You got it. Everybody have a great, great day.
Mate, you too. All the best. Thanks, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.